That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Sedgwick Guth is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Sedgwick, you just noticed something right behind me. What did you see in my bedroom?
I was like, no, wait, what? What's on your wall?
What is on my wall? You tell me.
They look like ink drawings I did of like physique pictorial subjects.
Okay, and for anybody watching, I'm giving us a good view of that. So yes, I, in my gay ass bedroom, have two gorgeous Sedgwick pieces above my marital bed, and every single night I get to look at these very sexy hand-drawn men by this very sexy guest. Sedgwick, how does it feel to know that I am sleeping beneath your work every single night?
I mean, I'm honored. I think that's the least I can say. There are protectors looking over you.
They really are. They really are. And you know what? I have to shout out my gay-ass husband, Matthew Lummis, who first introduced me to your work. And he is the one who ordered your pieces for our home. And I have to say, your work is not only incredibly beautiful, sometimes horny, always very queer, but you yourself have an amazing online presence. And so I think that it's very exciting for our listeners to get a bit of a glimpse into Sedgwick Guth's personalité. Question one for this gay ass podcast.
Oh, no.
We talk about the word slut as a celebration. I think reclaiming our sexuality and our horniness is a beautiful thing in this day and age. Sedgwick Guth, do you identify with that word slut?
Currently I do not, but there have been times in my life when I definitely have.
Oh, I love. And is there a reason why you're currently in a nun phase? Is it a monog phase? What is it giving right now?
It's giving, I'm not dating anyone phase, and I am just very career, like, I'm very much focused on my career, and, I'm not on any apps. The only thing I'm on is Instagram, so,
well,
and I haven't been for years.
Ugh, I'm so jealous. You must have so much more space in your brain to not fixate on the things that are built to make us feel bad about ourselves.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I think Instagram does a pretty damn good job.
You know, not wrong. But at least are you getting, you probably get a lot of flirty DMs from guys on Instagram. How does that take, does that ever take over your day?
So, you know, I think all of us get our fair share of flirtatious DMs. It depends on what I decide to share that day, what sort of content. I'm also very conscious of the machine that I'm operating in. So, you know, sorry kids, but some of it's rather manipulative because of the algorithm. It's like social media is tied into to everything now, including 100%. Our careers, where I feel like it even should be like, well, it's almost like a utility. You know, like we have electric, we have like other things. I'm just like, who goes for a job interview and now it doesn't require you to have some sort of social media presence or understanding? And I'm like, but to get back, you know, I might do something thirst adjacent in a story because I might have something to promote. So then the follow-up is a story about like, oh, I have a show coming up or this is this new work or what have you. And I mean, everybody does it who, you know, operates within that sphere.
Oh, I thought you were about to take your shirt off for me to do it for this episode.
No, I didn't realize that my chain popped out when I was running looking for actual, really, like my... Sorry, everyone, for the big... for the big headphones.
No, we love the big headphones. I have to say that I myself have been guilty of posting maybe thirst to boost the algorithm. And I think that it is totally kosher, but sometimes I do wonder if I should either feel bad or like I am... I don't know. Some of my own shame pops up when I post a thirst trap. When sometimes I just want to post my hairy tits and there shouldn't be anything wrong with that, right?
No, there absolutely shouldn't be anything wrong with that. But I have that struggle myself almost every day sometimes. Specifically, and it's not the act of doing it, and I don't have any shame about my body per se. Or like I'm not – some people will like push back against me for some things in a judgmental way.
Hmm.
And I will be like, if you really assess the image that you're looking at, it's rather rated G when you look at it. Like, it's, say, like a pair of boxer shorts. What's right. the distinction between them and a pair of shorts? Like, I could be wearing a Speedo at the beach, which is less coverage than a pair of boxers. But it's like this coded thing of like, oh, well, I know this is an undergarment, so this is like whatever. But look at women who run around now like, and I'm not mad about it, but like sports bras to go to Trader Joe's. Like, and it's like.
Yes, it is very layered in terms of evoking reactions of like slut shaming and all of that.
Right. And just to like piggyback on some of that too, like when the pushback oftentimes, and this is, I love our allies, I love my straight friends, but oftentimes the judgment and it's sort of a passive aggressive, like microaggressions, like you're at a dinner party or something like that. And they'll be like, oh, well, you're always like naked on Instagram or like in this yep. one Christmas party last year. And I got so irritated. I had like no threshold. And this very intelligent straight woman of a certain age says something to me. And then I just was so bitchy back. And I was like, you know, you just wish you looked like me, you know, and.
Good job, like, Sedgwick. What was the response to that?
Well, she was just completely flustered. And I was just like, well, you're a self-identifying progressive woman. I'm like, are you not, you know, body shaming me? Are you not like, and I went down like, boom, 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 you know, and I didn't want, it was just not the right time. And and the expectation is always on the person that's being judged.
Yeah.
To like, to be sensitive to that person who is throwing that at us, you know, like. We have to manage their feelings, understand where they're coming from, why they're saying it. And I'm like, yes. And I do that many times. And I do that many times even with gay men, with queer people. I do that as well when they're like, oh, everything you do is so sexy. And I'm like, you're not really looking at what I'm doing then. So
I co-sign 100% us delivering the sass back. If there, I'm at a point in my life as well where sometimes I'm not just going to take it. I'm not going to be ass up for the shade. I am going to be a dom daddy and hold the mirror up and be sassy right back. And I think that it can be very healing to sometimes stand up for ourselves in that way.
Yeah, and I also want to clarify, like, when I said that, like, you wish you looked like this, I'm not trying to say, like, you know, I'm all that or anything. Like, so, like, it was just more of in the moment of, like, you know, well, maybe you would be doing it, or maybe you should be doing it.
Yeah,
so
it's well, like, you're asking where is this coming from? You know, I understood what you were saying, but...
It was disappointing. It was very disappointing, and I think most of the time, I'm like, when I'm met with that, or that is, like, directed at me... The first feeling is it's disappointment, like kind of couched around with some low-key anger.
Of course, of course. Like... Well, and also, if we may talk about the timing of that party last year was the holidays, and we are now embarking on the holiday season for this year, and I think the holidays especially bring up a bit of a fraughtness. In fact, Sedgwick Guth, I am one day away from flying to St. Louis, Missouri to see my family, it's a pre-Thanksgiving.
An early Thanksgiving.
We're actually going to Palm Springs for Thanksgiving, so like I can't wait to let you know about my gay tales from there. But you did bring up, though, some of your work that deals with underwear, especially I want to talk about the jock straps of it all. One of my favorite pieces of yours, you have a giant embroidered piece. It's called Jock Cross, a cross made up of jock straps.
It's in Boston right now.
Shout out to Boston. Tell me, as we get into your herstory a bit, do you have a religious past, a religious present, and does that at all play a role in your shame or just identity as a queer man?
I'm born and raised in Pennsylvania. That's where I am right now. Lebanon County, Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania Dutch country. I am, you know, I was raised Lutheran, more of a stricter end of Lutheran.
What's the stereotype about Lutheran? What's the strict Lutheran stereotype?
Well, some people will jokingly say it's Catholic light.
Oh.
So Martin Luther, if you know anything about history, like he's the first who broke away from the Catholic Church. And that's why we have everything else. So the first Protestant religion was Lutheran, like it was to be a Lutheran. And then all the like other things split off of that. So you'd have
like
Methodist
OG,
and whatever.
OG white, yes. Old white.
Yes. I grew up in a very progressive family, a Democratic family, people who were in public office, like farmers, politicians, beauty queens. That's usually what I say come from. So, it's kind of a bit of a joke. I mean, there were a lot of artists in there as well. So, but I'm taking a long time to get to the answer to this question. So I was definitely in the closet. There really wasn't any space for queer people. I didn't hear, like within my own immediate family, I didn't hear anything negative about known queer people that were in the area, because there were the known types. I don't mean anything derogatory by that, but there were some known people that would probably, you know, people would whisper about.
Oh yeah. I had that too. I had that too in my hometown for sure.
And growing up in the '80s and the '90s as well, it's like, you know, we had AIDS and there was a lot of, you know, it was, to be a little gay boy, I really couldn't be. So I was artistic, but I also played sports.
She had a bit of the athletic privilege of maybe trying to blend in with the straights.
Well, I just liked playing sports too. Like, so I loved playing baseball.
I'm so jealous. I never enjoyed a sport. But
you
like,
you know what? That's okay. That's
and
okay.
Thank you for saying yeah. that.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
I love to get a glimpse into the upbringings of it all, especially when you're talking about like the Pennsylvania Lutheranism of it all. Did you have your first boy kiss growing up in Pennsylvania, or did you wait till you?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
well, okay. Where were we? What was it like?
Oh, I was actually, it was like my first year of college, actually. So
that's when I shared my first boy kiss, Cedric. Cheers to that.
Yeah.
What, do you remember if it felt electric? Do you remember?
Oh, it definitely did. Like, I was like, he was like, we became friends. We hung out all the time. We would go to shows together, like underage shows and things like that. And, you know, and then sometimes he would crash. And
when he crashed, was there cuddling or did you try to
oh,
keep
yeah,
it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. there was. Yeah.
I'm so happy for you, really.
And now he's married with children, so. With a woman, yeah. I mean, I haven't talked to him for, like, a long time.
I mean, this is a more intense conversation that I don't mean to get too deep into, but do you have your own personal theory about if he is just on the spectrum of sexuality? Do you have a feeling about closetedness? Do you have any sort of gut feeling about what his journey has been?
I think that most people are on a quote-unquote spectrum.
Yeah.
And I think that there are times throughout the journey of your existence that things are more prevalent than others, and sometimes, like, for every time there is a season, so sometimes, like, that was that time, and, you know, they explored that, and it's just, like, it's not really what gets them going.
Yeah, so. yeah. And listen, your first ever lover might have had an amazing time with you, and then met his wife.
Yeah, that Chapel Roan song, you know? There you go.
And there you go.
Hi, Jason.
Hi, Jason. I do want to know, though, since you gave us a glimpse into the first kiss, but then we go to the present and you say that you're currently not dating, would you say that your most recent slutty era or dating era, what were your takeaways, or was there something that happened that led to you wanting to stop the dating?
I think we all have our definitions of dating, of what slutty is, what being a slut is. So it's not like I'm abstaining from sex. It's just that there was a time, particularly post my divorce a number of years ago, where I went through like a 2-year, very intense window of like, it was a revolving door.
Yeah.
And it was tied into a lot of psychological stuff too, about like my self-esteem and stuff like that. You know, I think that's human and normal.
Very.
And then post that, it's like, then I started like getting back into like the dating of it all. And so I was like dating people more in a monogamous way. Like, so that was cycling for a while, or, you know, and then we're in our present era where everything seems like a situationship. So
it sounds like an epidemic right now. I mean, I am a married gay in an open relation, but I hear a lot about the situationship dilemmas across this nation, and it does sound like of the moment. I do want to, though, talk about how you gave a really great insight into the cross between hooking up and dating with like our own psychology, in terms of sometimes we are reacting about maybe boosting up our self-esteem by whether it is getting out into the dating world, whether it's hooking up, posting thirst traps, whatever. Do you find post-divorce you were just sort of searching for a dopamine hit that allowed you to feel loved? Did you feel like you got to a place where you were just having sex because you were enjoying it? I want to hear more about that, sort of where you were. Unless you don't want to talk about it, then we don't have to.
No, I'm fine touching on it. I know now that initially at the time when I was like really stepping into being like super slutty, it was more about asserting that I was an attractive person, regaining my, you know, some semblance of like self-esteem. Like when you're in something that's, you know, kind of devolves into something that's a little bit like loveless, less physical, like yeah. It was just like not the right fit that, you know, I'd hoped it would be. So that's when I started becoming more slutty, and clearly I was very much enjoying, I mean, mostly enjoying myself, you know, not every hookup is great. You know, there's some that are like fantastic. There's some that are good. Like there's a whole sliding scale.
My pet peeve of a hookup in this day and age is if someone invites you over to their home and they know you're coming to their home to hook up, if it looks like a giant dumpster, I think you should reschedule the hookup and pick up the garbage and food that is all over litter. I mean, like it just happened to me recently where I walked into somebody's home and I was like, we need TLC in a film crew.
Well, I think there's like some room to be like, if I was in a position, say where I was hosting and say I was had construction going on in my house, I would make that clear to a person. Be like, hey, it's a work zone in parts of the house right now.
Yeah,
like,
blah, blah, blah.
Or, you know, I'm working on getting my bathroom remodeled or whatever.
Yeah. Like, I don't need it to look like a Martha Stewart beautiful activation. But I think that it only happened to me a couple times where one time I went to this guy's place that was like incredibly dark. And he, I think, kept it dark on purpose. And then when he offered a little more light, I was like, yes, please. And then it revealed just like piles and trash.
I mean, if the Board of Health needs to get involved, I think it's perfectly acceptable for you to cancel and turn around and leave.
I know, and that's a whole other question. But before we get
into I don't care how hot they are. So.
I know, Cedric, I know, but you at least sounds like you have built up the self-esteem, and I still have a tiny ways to go. We do put up the paywall in this podcast to talk about the horniest questions, and I do want to guide us into that conversation. Cedric, are there any hookup tales or dating tales that stick out in your mind as either being incredibly formative, salacious, sexy, exciting, or just memorable in any way?
Jeez, it's like asking, like, what's your favorite song?
You know, like, or Broadway show.
There's some memorable, like, you know, there's like a formative one, and then there's like a more recent, like an A plus.
Okay, let's go recent A plus first. That sounds really exciting to me.
There is a couple I knew each individually via Instagram, and then, you know, a number of years, and they're both creative types, I would say that, and they're both very sexy, and I happen to be in the same sort of town as them, the one, like, during a span of time, and we just naturally ran into each other.
Love.
And then we just, like, started hanging out, and I wasn't sure, like, what, you know,
the vibe
was. I was like, oh, this is so great to meet you, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I can be around very attractive men and not be like, I need to do anything more with you. Like, I can just enjoy, like, the people, the person. And I guess it's just very simple in that we hung out, like, we were at a bar the one night, and it's just, like, just making out with each one of them very intensely. And then it was kind of ridiculous for me. And, you know, and then we came back to the place I was staying, and then...
For the rest of this interview, head to Substack, linked in the description. You can also watch bonus episodes with Mikey Graceffa from Death Becomes Her, Isaiah Rutledge, Sunset Boulevard's G-Min Moon, we have Derek Cage, Patrick, Nick, Thanos, Mark. They're all hot, the stories are amazing, and you should go check it out at substack.com/@EricWills, linked in the description. I love you, bye!